Today is Friday, February 6th, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. Mamdani caps 1 month of betrayal with endorsement of right-wing Democrat Kathy Hochul. By Joseph Keyshaw. After spending an hour with the newly elected Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani last November, Donald Trump described him as very rational and predicted that he would do really great things. Mamdani has not disappointed the fascist president. It has been barely a month since Mamdani assumed office as mayor of New York City. But in that short time, he has already accomplished a great deal, incomprehensibly betraying and repudiating the oppositional sentiment that propelled him into office. Caesar, in Gaul, came, saw, and conquered. Mamdani, in New York's Gracie Mansion, has compromised, colluded, and capitulated. The latest in an endless train of disorderly retreats came on Thursday, with Mamdani's endorsement of right-wing Democrat and New York Governor Kathy Hochul in the upcoming gubernatorial primaries. While still a lowly assemblyman, Mamdani described Hochul's support for the genocide in Gaza as disgusting and denounced her political agenda as Republican light. That was just 2 years ago. But in a statement published in The Nation, Mamdani, his disgust turned to admiration, justified his endorsement of Hochul by praising their shared commitment to government that is equal parts competent and trustworthy. Hochul, he wrote, has chosen to govern in the spirit of transformation, and he held up their collaboration as a model of effective government. Amidst all the political pablum, Mamdani didn't mention that more than 15,000 nurses have been on strike in New York City for nearly 4 weeks, demanding safe staffing, livable wages, and basic workplace protections. Hochul, a millionaire stalwart of the Democratic Party establishment, has chosen to govern by playing a central role in efforts to break the strike. Even before the walkout began, she issued an executive order declaring a state of emergency to allow hospitals to import out-of-state nurses without New York licenses. Since then, hospitals have spent more than $100 million on scab labour, while striking nurses have gone without health insurance or strike pay. Earlier this week, hundreds of nurses marched through freezing temperatures to Hochul's Midtown Manhattan office, chanting, "Vote her out," and denouncing her for putting our lives in jeopardy. Just hours later, Hochul extended the strike-breaking measure, underscoring her contempt for the nurses and her loyalty to the millionaire hospital executives and the oligarchs who sit on the boards of the very hospitals the nurses are striking against. Mamdani has staged photo ops on the picket lines while stabbing nurses in the back, working behind the scenes with Hochul and the leadership of the New York State Nurses Association, the NYSNA, to shut down the strike. In endorsing Hochul, Mamdani has demonstrated his skill in slipping a stiletto into the back of a political ally. In the Democratic primaries, Hochul's main opponent is Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado, who has selected as his running mate India Walton, a member of the DSA and former mayoral candidate in Buffalo, whom Mamdani personally campaigned for in 2021. The endorsement of Hochul is only the latest in a series of filthy betrayals and manoeuvres that have defined Mamdani's first month in office. Just 10 days earlier, Mamdani praised the police officers who shot 22-year-old Bangladeshi immigrant Jabez Chakraborty in Queens. Chakraborty, who was experiencing a mental health crisis, was gunned down by NYPD officers after his family called 911 seeking help. As the family was detained, interrogated, and denied access to their dying son, Mamdani chose to express his gratitude to the first responders who put themselves on the line each day to keep our community safe. This was followed by a crackdown on a peaceful anti-ICE protest in Manhattan, where the NYPD's Strategic Response Group, the SRG, long denounced by civil rights groups, arrested multiple demonstrators. Mamdani had previously pledged to disband the SRG. On Thursday, the same police agency arrested 13 nurses protesting outside a New York City hospital, and a dozen faculty, staff, and students at Columbia University protesting Trump and the actions of ICE. These actions have been overseen by Jessica Tisch, who Mamdani reappointed as police commissioner as one of his first acts as mayor. A billionaire heiress and leading architect of New York's vast surveillance state, Tisch was central to the NYPD's crackdown on anti-genocide protests and the detention of immigrants in collaboration with ICE. The Mamdani administration is also planning major cuts in response to a $12.6 billion budget shortfall in the city. While posturing as an opponent of austerity, he has established a network of chief saving officers, CSO, across city departments tasked with identifying spending cuts under the guise of efficiency. Mamdani has already agreed, in collaboration with Hochul, to shelve talks of taxing the rich, one of his main campaign slogans. All the actions taken by Mamdani since his election as New York's so-called first socialist mayor are a continuation of the right about face that he executed abruptly with his meeting with Donald Trump at the White House on November 21st. At the time, the DSA and pseudo-left supporters of Mamdani hailed his embrace of Trump as a tactical masterstroke to win the fascist president's support for the affordability agenda. What a fraud. In fact, Trump, an old New York con man, sized up Mamdani and understood what he was dealing with. Another petty bourgeois political flunky looking for a pat on the head. Mamdani wanted nothing more than for Trump to pass the word to the Wall Street power brokers that they had nothing to worry about. The Big Apple remained in a safe set of hands. 2 days after Mamdani was inaugurated, Trump invaded Venezuela and abducted its president, Nicolas Maduro, who was transported to a federal jail under Mamdani's jurisdiction in Brooklyn. He has claimed that he privately raised concerns about the operation in a phone call with Trump, but has said nothing since. In his endorsement of Hochul, Mamdani wrote that the two have fought to protect New Yorkers from ICE and defended our democracy. These statements are lies. Since his meeting with Trump, Mamdani has refrained from issuing any substantive public criticism of a president who is waging war on the Constitution and implementing a presidential dictatorship. According to multiple reports, the two remain in regular contact, and Trump recently praised Mamdani for his budget plans, declaring that Zoran is finally being honest about how bad it really is. When Mamdani was elected in November, the World Socialist website understood the objective significance of the broad opposition that propelled him into office. But it did not pander to the prevailing illusions. The pro-capitalist class character of the new administration would quickly emerge. But what will Mamdani do, we warned, when workers enter into struggle? Inevitably, the logic of class interests will assert itself. Mamdani will bow to the demands of the financial and political establishment. And so he has. Mamdani is conducting himself as a conventional, right-wing, capitalist politician. In doing so, Mamdani continues a pattern set by his political predecessors, Syriza in Greece, Podemos in Spain, the Left Party in Germany, Jeremy Corbyn in the UK, Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the United States. All promised to break with austerity and inequality, or capitulated to the financial elite they claimed to oppose. Memdani is distinguishing himself only by the speed with which he has cast aside whatever principles he claimed to have. Sriza took several months after coming to power in 2015 to repudiate its pledge to end austerity and impose the brutal demands of the European banks. Mamdani is matching Syriza's accomplishments in just a few weeks. Before it is all over, Mamdani will be exposed as the most miserable scoundrel of all the pseudo-left. But Mamdani has not been without a reliable chorus of political frauds. From the DSA, which proclaimed, upon Mamdani's victory, socialism wins, to its affiliated Jacobin magazine, which declared that Zoran Mamdani's victory points the way forward, to Socialist Alternative, which published a breathless editorial declaring full steam ahead to fight Trump and the Democratic Party establishment. When the WSWS refers to the pseudo-left, this is not an epithet, but an accurate political definition. They are bourgeois politicians of the second rank, who function as critical instruments of capitalist rule. In social terms, they represent layers of the affluent upper middle class, closely tied to the corporate and state apparatus, seeking only a more comfortable position within the hierarchy of wealth and power. For workers and young people who voted or supported Mamdani, it is necessary to draw sharp political lessons. The fight for socialism requires a complete and irreconcilable break with the Democratic Party and the establishment of the political independence of the working class. The way forward lies not in illusions about reforming the existing system, but in turning to the growing struggles of the working class and forging the revolutionary leadership required to put an end to capitalism, fascism, and war. Layoffs by US firms tripled in January as mass job cuts accelerate to Great Recession levels. By Tom Hall. More than 108,000 layoffs were announced by US firms in January, the highest total for the start of the year since 2009, the second year of the Great Recession. According to Challenger, Gray and Christmas, which produces the widely cited monthly reports on layoffs, hiring levels also fell to the lowest point since the firm began tracking the data in 2009. January's layoffs were more than double the total recorded in the same month last year, and tripled the level announced in December. In 2025, US companies announced more than 1.2 million layoffs, the highest level since 2020, the first year of the pandemic. The figures for the first month of 2026 already indicate that the pace of job destruction is accelerating into the new year. The wave of layoffs is part of a global jobs bloodbath driven by a ruthless global search for new sources of profit to sustain uncontrollable levels of debt and financial bubbles on which the wealth of the oligarchy rests. The other side of this global war on the working class is imperialist plunder, expressed in the attack on Venezuela and the impending attack on Iran. Among the largest announcements, Amazon announced 16,000 job cuts last month, concentrated in corporate and technology positions. UPS, now entering the third year of a vast restructuring program, announced plans to eliminate 30,000 additional jobs on top of the 48,000 already cut since last year. UPS and Amazon alone accounted for nearly half of all layoffs announced in January. Other major layoffs announced so far this year include about 1,000 job cuts last month at Citi, with further reductions expected as part of an overall plan to shed 20,000 jobs. Cuts of 10-15% of the workforce at Meta Reality Lab, between 1,500 and 2,200 jobs. 4% of the global workforce at MasterCard, or around 1,400 jobs. 7% of jobs at software firm Autodesk, around 1,000 positions. 800 jobs at Home Depot. 775 Nike distribution center jobs in the American South. 15% of the workforce at social media platform Pinterest. 400 jobs at business software firm Workday. In addition, some 30,000 layoffs are reportedly pending at Oracle, as the company seeks to fund an expansion of data center capacity. This week, 300 layoffs were also announced at the Washington Post, purchased by Jeff Bezos in 2013. The newspaper has been rapidly shifted in recent years toward a pro-Trump editorial stance, a process that now amounts to the virtual destruction of one of America's principal newspapers of record. Another major center of job cuts is the federal government, where around 300,000 layoffs were carried out last year. The Trump administration is slashing social programs, regulatory agencies, and all other government functions that do not directly contribute to boosting corporate profit, war, or police repression. A new rule announced by the White House on Thursday strips job protections from 50,000 higher-level federal employees. A key element is the weaponization of artificial intelligence to attempt to replace entire sections of the workforce. Kristalina Georgieva, a managing director of the International Monetary Fund, recently warned that AI is hitting the labor market like a tsunami, and most countries and most businesses are not prepared for it. While businesses cited AI as a factor in only 55,000 layoffs last year, Goldman Sachs predicts that the figure will rise to 20,000 a month this year in industries exposed to the new technology. Among industrial workers, the largest sections affected so far are in logistics, where the introduction of new autonomous robotics threatens to eliminate almost all in-warehouse jobs. In that sector, some 95,000 jobs were cut last year. Other industries experiencing steep declines include the auto industry, where 32,000 layoffs were carried out last year alone in response to lower-than-expected sales of electric vehicles. In healthcare, more than 17,000 layoffs were announced last month, the highest level since the start of the pandemic in 2020. This is particularly significant as 46,000 nurses and other healthcare workers are currently on strike on both coasts of the United States. These workers are being driven into struggle not only in defense of jobs and pay, but over safe staffing levels and the well-being of patients. A tremendous upsurge of class struggle is already beginning in the United States in response to the impossible economic situation confronting workers and the oligarchic dictatorship of Trump. Demands for a general strike, initially raised in protests against ICE murders in Minneapolis, will only grow over the course of the year. A significant aspect of the mass layoffs is their concentration among middle-class professionals. This represents a dramatic and extremely rapid reversal for some of the few sections of the workforce that were able to maintain a relatively decent standard of living in recent years. The tech industry alone has cut more than 478,000 jobs since the start of 2024, according to Challenger, making it one of the sectors most exposed to AI-driven restructuring. The development of the new Claude Cowork platform, for example, touched off a sell-off of tech stocks this week, as it threatened the future of a whole series of companies offering software as a service products to corporate clients. As one tech worker told the Austin American Statesman, "We are not hourly employees. We are not struggling. We are not at food banks. We are usually pretty well educated. But when we talk about the jobs that are lost, and we talk about bookkeepers or accountants or customer service agents, a lot of these jobs that people are able to support their families with and make a good living doing, those are now going to be taken over by AI." In reality, hundreds of federal employees were already forced to line up at food banks during last year's government shutdown, a warning of what lies ahead. A survey conducted by an AI research group in Austin found that 61% of respondents were worried about unemployment, while 45% feared an outright unemployment crisis. San Francisco, along with the broader Bay Area, a long-standing center of the U.S. tech industry, recorded a net loss of 4,400 jobs last year, according to government statistics cited by the San Francisco Standard. The primary drivers of job losses were tech, with 4,500 jobs eliminated, and professional and business services. The main sources of new employment were hospitality and leisure, low-wage jobs catering to a small layer enriching itself on massive inflows of Wall Street cash. This process has driven housing prices in the city, already among the highest in the country, to new heights. While the potential of AI is tremendous, it is being implemented in an irrational and unplanned manner that is inevitable under capitalism. Harvard Business Review notes that to understand the productivity impact of Gen AI requires disciplined experiments and measurement, which few organizations have done. A massive speculative bubble has developed around artificial intelligence, which one economist has described as 17 times larger than the dot-com bubble of 2000, and four times the real estate bubble that produced the Great Recession. Actual cost savings from AI deployment are reportedly developing far slower than anticipated, and may take years to fully realize. Nevertheless, vast sums continue to pour into the sector, with $1.6 trillion invested in new data centers and AI startups through 2024, and an estimated $375 billion more expected in 2025, according to Reuters. The run-up on Wall Street has enriched a tiny layer at the top, with US billionaires increasing their combined wealth by $1.5 trillion last year. At the same time, it is laying the groundwork for a massive financial crisis in the near future that will far exceed the crash of 2008-2009. The rising gold prices indicates that this crisis is already calling into question the viability of the dollar and the credibility of US government debt. These shocks will produce, and already are producing, profound political consequences that are forcing a radicalization of the population, not only among workers, but also among substantial sections of the middle class. The growing demands for a general strike among protests have not yet acquired a distinctly working-class character. Increasingly, these layers are turning toward the working class for leadership in the fight against capitalist exploitation. This underscores the decisive importance of conscious preparations for a mass movement by the working class, acting as an independent and leading force against mass layoffs, austerity, and the broader assault on democratic and social rights. Trump calls for country to move on from Epstein files as scale and scope of criminality cover-up expand. By Jacob Cross. The haphazard release of millions of documents, emails, pictures and videos as part of the Epstein files last Friday has shaken the rotten foundations of the Trump administration. In the days since the files' release, it has become clear to millions of people that the administration and the ruling class as a whole is engaged in a massive cover-up aimed at protecting not only the deeply implicated fascists in the White House, but dozens, if not hundreds, of politicians, celebrities, and wealthy figures who cavorted with the deceased, convicted child sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. In a hearing last year before the Senate Judiciary Committee, FBI Director Cash Patel emphatically stated that there was no credible information that Epstein trafficked women or underage girls to anybody besides himself. There is no credible information, none, Patel declared, adding, if there were, I would bring the case yesterday that he trafficked to other individuals. While the files are still being sifted, what has been revealed thus far conclusively proves that many people continue to interact with Epstein after his 2008 conviction, precisely because they were seeking to make use of his extensive sex trafficking network. There are several emails in which Epstein and unnamed individuals discuss young people and children in lewd detail, while also apparently sharing photographs. One March 19, 2018 email from a redacted sender to Epstein reads, "I found at least three very good, young, poor, but we was so tired. I will cover up this week. Meet this one, not the beauty queen, but we both likes her a lot." An email from September 22, 2016 to Epstein from redacted includes a .jpg image attachment and the text, age 10. Another one sent to Epstein on the same date includes another JPEG image attachment and the text, age 11. The content of a 2012 email chain between Epstein and someone identified only as Ismo concerns which gynecologist Epstein sent his victims to. Ismo asked Epstein, "Do you remember the name of the gynecologist that you used to send your victims to?" Epstein replied, "New York," to which Ismo wrote, "Yes, many years ago you used to send them to a gyno in New York who once commented something to the effect that you were keeping him in business single-handedly." In another email chain, Epstein and someone named Olivia Colum compared women to aquatic animals. Epstein wrote to Colum that he was on my island in the Caribbean with an aquarium full of girls. Colum replied, "The King of Saudi Arabia has a few white sharks at his Jeddah Palace. I totally prefer yours. Sure, I would enjoy the view." Epstein responded, "As to a Russia, I guess some might refer to them as white sharks." Later, Epstein compared the girls to shrimp. You throw away the head and keep the body. While millions of people continued to pore over the files, Trump, a longtime associate of Epstein's, is eager to move on. Speaking in the White House on February 3rd, Trump said, "I think it's really time for the country to get onto something else, now that nothing came out about me, other than it was a conspiracy against me, literally, by Epstein and other people. But I think it's time now for the country to maybe get onto something else." Asked by a reporter for his reaction to Peter Mandelson resigning after being exposed in the latest file release, Trump claimed he did not know about it, but said it was too bad. He then asserted that the files only implicated Democrats. "So that takes care of Epstein, as far as Trump is concerned. But you got a lot of Democrats out there that are very much involved with Epstein. But I'll be honest with you, you got to get back to running the country too." Questioned by CNN's Caitlin Collins on whether he had read the files, given that his Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick and his largest single donor, Elon Musk, were revealed to have repeatedly pleaded to visit Epstein's island, Trump denied having done so. Trump continued, "No, I have a lot of things I'm doing. A lot of things. I don't know. You mentioned two names. I'm sure they're fine. They're fine. Otherwise, there would have been major headlines." Collins pressed Trump on the Justice Department's redactions, noting that many survivors of Epstein's abuse were unhappy that their names, photos, and other private information were not redacted, while those of Epstein's co-conspirators were. Trump cut her off, claiming he heard some were upset that they released too much. Trump again called for the country to move on to something else, "now that nothing came out about me. But I think now it's time for the country to maybe get on to something else." Collins again pressed further, "What would you say to people who say they haven't gotten justice? To the survivors who say they haven't gotten justice?" An enraged Trump snapped, "You are the worst reporter. CNN has no ratings because of people like you. She's a young woman. I don't think I've ever seen you smile. I've known you for 10 years. I don't think I have ever seen a smile on your face." Collins replied, "Well, I'm asking about survivors of Epstein," at which point Trump cut her off. "You know why you are not smiling? Because you are not telling the truth, and you are a very dishonest organization, and they should be ashamed of you." In an appearance with Laura Ingraham on Fox News Tuesday, Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche indicated that no charges or investigations would be forthcoming, claiming bizarrely that it was not a crime to party with Mr. Epstein. Ingraham asked whether there was any chance any of these individuals who partied with Epstein and engaged in relations with minors would be prosecuted. Any chance? Blanche replied, "Well, look, I'll never say no, and we will always investigate any evidence of misconduct. but as you know, it is not a crime to party with Mr. Epstein. And it's not a crime to email with Mr. Epstein. And some of these men may have done horrible things. And if we have evidence that allows us to prosecute them, you better believe we will. But it's also the kind of thing that the American people need to understand, that it isn't a crime to party with Mr. Epstein. It isn't a crime. Ingraham interjected. Didn't look like that was all that was going on in some of those photos. I mean, if the photos could speak, some of them look pretty bad. Blanche replied, smiling, that's right, and unfortunately photos can't speak, so we need witnesses. In the same interview, Blanche acknowledged that mistakes were made when it came to redacting victims' names and pictures, but claimed the department was doing everything to protect victims. The day before, in a Sunday appearance on CNN's State of the Union, Blanche downplayed any possibility of investigations stemming from the files. There's a lot of correspondence. There's a lot of emails. There's a lot of photographs. There's a lot of horrible photographs that appear to be taken by Mr. Epstein of people around him. But that doesn't allow us necessarily to prosecute somebody. In a separate interview on ABC's This Week, Blanche said the Justice Department was finished with its review of the documents. We reviewed over 6 million pieces of paper, thousands of videos, tens of thousands of images, he said. Blanche's insistence that there is apparently nothing to investigate came just 3 days after he publicly stated, while announcing the latest release, that any depiction of CSAM or child pornography was obviously excluded. Anything that would jeopardize an active federal investigation, and finally anything that depicts or contains images of death, physical abuse or injury also not produced. In reality, Trump's Department of Justice has released at least 40 images of nude women, possibly underage. At the same time, the files have the names and email addresses of people corresponding with Epstein about procuring children and young women for sex blacked out, along with many mentions of Trump. It is obvious from both the character of the release and the statements of Trump and Blanche that the US government is doing everything in its power to cover up and conceal the fact that Epstein was a central intermediary within the ruling class, providing drugs, financial advice, and young people to wealthy and connected politicians as part of an international cabal advancing the interests of the financial oligarchy above all else. The ongoing cover-up underscores not only the criminal character of the entire US ruling class, but also the fact that justice for Epstein's victims will not come through the capitalist courts or appeals to the parties of big business. The only social force capable of ending the system that produced such a degenerated and criminal elite is the working class, united and imbued with a socialist program, aimed at expropriating the oligarchy and redirecting the wealth of society toward human need and social enrichment. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.